Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369, text and voicemail line. Hit us up wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. If you've got some comments, some questions, you want to leave a voicemail for us, 331-979-1369 is the place to do it. Also on social media at Locked On Bulls. Well, Matt, we talked about this earlier this week, and before we get into the Western Conference preview, we do a little bit of Bulls things too as well. Want to get to Justin Holiday and Denzel Valentine in our Bulls evaluations in this episode, but the inevitable happened, and just a few minutes as we're recording this, Dwayne Casey out as Toronto Raptors coach. How you doing on this Friday, and what do you think about that?
Happy Friday, Jordan. Happy Friday, Bulls Nation. Excited. We got a little crosstown series between the Cubs and Sox this weekend. Should be fun. But yeah, crazy news in the NBA world today that I guess everybody, like you said, it's sort of like we're all shocked, but we all kind of saw it coming, because when you are the number one seed and you have home court and you worked all season for home court, you have your franchise record 59-win season, and everybody, as depleted as LeBron's Cavs team was expecting this to finally be the year that the Raptors get over that LeBron James hump. And not only do they fail to do that, but they get swept by LeBron again, the second straight season. So it's crazy, and it's ironic, and in some ways unbelievable that just days after Casey was named the coach of the year by his peers, he is ousted in Toronto. And I mean, it's a deep, winding conversation about how much blame he actually deserves for the Raptors choking in that series, and really how much of it is on his players, in particular DeRozan and Lowry, who for all of the years of All-Stars and all the things they have on their resumes came up small again. So I can't imagine that Dwayne Casey will be unemployed for long if he doesn't want to take some time off. Like, there are still a handful of NBA head coaching vacancies out there, and I'm sure he'll get some calls. And you wonder who that next person might be in line. We've already heard that Mike Budenholzer, former Hawks coach, is somebody that the Raptors will probably take a look at. And, I mean, you just wonder, like, how much of this is just LeBron being too good? I mean, Dwayne Casey's story is one that many Eastern Conference coaches can sympathize with. Doesn't matter how good my All-Stars are. Doesn't matter how good my overall roster is, how deep my bench is. We can't get past LeBron in the playoffs. You feel for the guy.
I think it's just absolutely nuts. Like, has there ever been a case, and I didn't do extensive research on this, but I'm just wondering, can you think of anybody off the top of your head that in any professional sports has won, like, manager of the year or coach of the year in that same season, then days later they get fired? I can't think of anybody, at least over the last like 20 years or so.
In the NBA, this is actually something that's going on around Twitter right now. It's sort of the NBA's version of a Madden curse. Rob Perez tweeted this out. So not necessarily immediately that same year, but Avery Johnson won Coach of the Year in the 2005-2006 season, was fired by 2008. Sam Mitchell, 06-07, fired by 2008. Byron Scott, 07-08, Coach of the Year, fired in 2009. Mike Brown, Coach of the Year, 08-09, fired in 2010. George Karl, Coach of the Year, 2012-2013, fired in 2013.
Oh, my God.
So, Dwayne Casey, next in line in a bunch of guys who... Great regular season, and you know, I guess that's sort of the same thing as MVP and all of the other NBA regular season awards. They are regular season awards. Dwayne Casey, among other, you know, legitimate candidates, totally legitimate to be Coach of the Year, but he only gets two rounds into the playoffs. And whether or not you coach your team to a franchise record 59 wins in the regular season, if you don't get it done in the postseason, your job is anything but safe.
I would assume that some of these teams with job openings still will now extend their interviews, at least for Dwayne Casey. I can't imagine this guy going a long time throughout this summer without a job. Can you? Like, I feel like at least the Bucks maybe give him an interview. Detroit's got an opening job. Doesn't Orlando have their coaching job as well open?
Yep. Orlando, that's one that I've been hearing a lot since this news broke this morning, that he'd be a good fit for Orlando.
And then Mike Budenholzer, too. If he decides to leave, Atlanta's job's going to be open as well. So
he already has.
Oh, he has left. So
Yeah. They're already talking about Budenholzer replacing Casey in Toronto.
So Atlanta's job is open as well, which could be interesting, I mean, with a top pick. But, I mean, that's kind of backtracking in terms of where Dwayne Casey would be. Orlando's an interesting spot, too. I feel like he's going to get a job no matter, you know, it's only going to take a matter of maybe weeks, and maybe it even takes a matter of days. But I'm just shocked. And, like, I feel for Dwayne Casey, like, you look at what DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry do, and I think the bulk of the blame should be on those guys. Like, you're getting paid all of this money to be superstars in this league, and, you know, superstars that are supposed to be able to combat or at least give LeBron a fight. Like, I think that's the biggest thing, too. Say the Raptors took this series to seven and then lost. I think we would see a different outcome here. And I feel like the blame has to go majority on Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan and some of these other guys on this team who haven't figured it out. But like I had said a few episodes ago, you know, it's not like you can fire all 12, 15 guys on your team. It's the coach sometimes that you've got to make a move on if you don't want to blow up the entire team. And that seems like what Toronto's decided to do.
Yeah. And I mean, talking about where they go from here, and I mean, to me, if you hire Mike Budenholzer, that's just sort of like a lateral move as far as who you want to be the head coach leading this team. And like you said, some of the blame has to go on the players. And you wonder, like, I had some issues with some of the things Casey did from a strategical coaching standpoint in that series. I think he could have gotten more out of the Raptors to at least make that a series. Yes, LeBron played out of his freaking mind and his role players actually stepped up and contributed, as opposed to that Pacers series where they did next to nothing. Even still, that 59-win Raptors team was better than the effort they put forth in that series. And I think a big chunk of that problem is the mental hurdle. And especially once they coughed up game one, which they really had from wire to wire, those feelings of doubt started to creep in. And at some level, the head coach is to blame for that. Whatever he failed to do to get his guys mentally prepared for that series, and then mentally get them over that, okay, game one happened, it's in the past, throw it away. They kept that game one choke with them for games 2, 3, and 4, and it was obvious because they played worse in games 2 and 3 and 4. That team got progressively worse as they were getting swept. Some of that is absolutely on Dwayne Casey, but geez, it's still hard to say that all of that is his fault, and it's still hard to say that if they just make a lateral hire like Budenholzer, that team's going to do anything better and get past LeBron if they meet LeBron again next year.
It's going to be very, very interesting to see what goes on in Toronto and see, like, even throughout next season, if a coaching change is part of that spark that can do something different. But obviously, beyond the coaching thing, beyond the coaching replacement, like, it's clear Toronto's going to have to figure out what they can do in order to build upon this roster. Like, you, at some point, you got to look around that roster and say, you know what, we either got to upgrade or we've got to make a dramatic move here. And I think this is one dramatic move to fire Dwayne Casey. I'm interested to see what they do with that roster as a whole. Matt, I want to get to the Western Conference, though, finals here, because Warriors-Rockets, this is what we've been waiting for. I don't know if as an NBA fan, you've been waiting for this all season, but I certainly have. This is supposed to be one of the best series coming in. Obviously, it could be arguably better than the NBA finals. Rockets, Warriors, this is going to be an ultimate test, not only for Chris Paul and James Harden, but for the four guys on the Warriors, the four stars in Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Kevin Durant and company. I think this is going to be a whole hell of a lot of a fun series. Do you see any shot where the Golden State Warriors are battled and could potentially be upset? Because right now, I know, like, as much hype as the Rockets are getting, I still, like I said with LeBron, I'm not going to bet against the Warriors until I actually see them lose. And I feel like this type of game, the way that this series is going to go, is a little bit of a glimpse into what the future of the NBA is, right? Fast-paced, offensive scoring teams going up head-to-head against each other. And to get both of these teams on the Western Conference side to play against each other, what we've been waiting for all season, I think is going to be a whole hell of a lot of fun. What do you think about this series? Do you think the Rockets can possibly pull up off an upset against this Warriors team? Do you feel like the Warriors are still strong enough to come in here and say, you know what, they're the dominant team? Sort of like Draymond Green had said at his post-game press conference, where he said he's not worried about the Rockets and he's not worried about who we're playing. Our goal is to get to the finals and win a championship. So what do you think about this series?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for it. I hope it is a series that goes at least six games. I'm taking the Warriors because they are the defending champs, and for as many nagging injury issues they had throughout the season, they look to be all on board and healthy right now, as far as the guys who are really vital to this rotation. And the Rockets, congratulations, Chris Paul. You finally, after all these years in the NBA, made it to the Western Conference Finals. James Harden, known also like his backcourt teammate CP3, known as a playoff choker, got through and made it to the Western Conference Finals. I mean, as impressive as the Rockets were all regular season long, and when you see the emergence of not just Clint Capella, but some of their role players like PJ Tucker and Luke Mbamute, who's back in the fold now after his injury, like, the Rockets have what it takes on paper, and they have the talent on paper to beat the Warriors in a best-of-seven series. It's possible. But seeing as the Warriors are the team that have been to the finals for the past three seasons and have the championship experience, I'm taking the Warriors. I mean, it's that simple. And also, as good as CP3 is, as good as James Harden is, I think I can confidently say that the Warriors, if all players are playing to the height of their abilities, have the two best players in this series, in Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. And that's not even mentioning Draymond and Klay and all the other solid players that they have in Golden State. They have the two best players. If you have the two best players, you're probably going to win the series.
I think there's a lot of pressure, not only on the Rockets because they're going up against the Warriors, but I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, and to me, I feel like LeBron said it best when he was sort of laughing at other teams when they were so concerned about home court advantage. And he had a fantastic quote where he said, you know, all these teams worry so much about getting home court advantage for the playoffs and throughout the playoffs. And he said, you know what? It could all change in one game. All you have to do is steal one game on the road and home court advantage flips. So to me, I think it's additional pressure on the Rockets, who are going to be hosting the first two games. Like, you have to make sure if the Rockets want to stay in this series, you've got to win those first two games at home. And then you let the chips fall where they may when you go to Golden State. But to me, I think game one especially, you can't afford to let the Warriors win that game one. Then everything flips completely. Your home court advantage flips. I think the pressure gets tighter. But would you agree with me that, like, even in this playoffs alone, you look at it, I feel like the teams that have owned home court advantage have been had a lot of pressure put on them so far by maybe some of these teams. And maybe it's sort of a boding trend where some of these other teams really don't care if they get home court advantage. And maybe you can point even to the Warriors, who weren't the number one overall seed in the Western Conference this year, and they don't really care. So what do you kind of think about that in terms of like pressure on home court advantage and teams at home, especially in the first two games?
Yeah, I mean, I'd take championship experience and talent over home court any day. LeBron is a perfect example. Did anybody think that it would have made a big difference that LeBron's Cavs didn't have home court against Toronto? No. And clearly he proved that it didn't matter. The Warriors are the team that have the championship experience and the better players. So, no, I don't think home court matters. And because this is still new territory for these Houston Rockets, I absolutely expect the Warriors to steal one of those games. Whether it's game one or game two, I don't know. But I absolutely believe that the Warriors will win one of those first two games. And then from there, it's absolutely possible that the Rockets can go to Oakland and steal one of those games. And then, you know, we could be tied, you know, all knotted up 2-2 heading into a crucial game five, and each team is stealing one on the road. I absolutely see that as a possible outcome here through the first half of this series. But to your question, no, I don't think home court is a big deal here. The Rockets and the Warriors both have, you know, great loud home court arenas. I would say the Warriors probably have a little bit more of an edge there. Rockets fans tend to show up late, as I've been watching these playoff games, you know, a lot of empty seats through the first quarter in Houston. So maybe I give the Warriors a bit more of an edge just because, you know, once Oracle is rocking, that place can get loud and crazy, and the Warriors can reel off one of those, you know, runs, and the place goes even crazier, and then all of a sudden you blink and the Warriors are up 20. That being said, the Rockets and their offensive potency are just as capable of doing that same kind of thing. So I don't think home court's going to play a big deal unless it gets to Game 7. If it gets to Game 7, then yeah, the Rockets are going to be really happy that they worked all season long to get that one seed away from Golden State.
Real quick, before we take a break here, give me your X factors for both teams. One X factor in terms of a player or a coach or something that they need to do, not only for the Warriors, but for the Rockets. I'll kind of start here. I think the X factor for me for this Rockets team is Clint Capella's got to continue to play the way he has. I think if the Rockets can figure out a way not only to use their pace and space spread out offense, if they're being clogged at the three-point line, I think Clint Capella is going to be a huge X factor for this Houston Rockets team in order to be able to dominate and sort of open up shots for them. And then for the Warriors too, I think their X factor, really, I mean, you look at Steph Curry, you look at Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and some of the other role players that have stepped up for this team, too. I think an X factor for me would be finding a way to stop James Harden. You stop James Harden, that's pretty much it. Like, for me, at least, for the Rockets, you stop him, you avoid him getting to the line a ton, which he loves to do. He loves to drive to the basket and try to get fouled, get to the line. I think that's an X factor for the Warriors, too. But, I mean, there's not really any X factors on the Warriors where I say they ultimately need this to happen in order to win, because still, they've won two NBA championships in the last 3 years. They've got four of the top 10 players, 12, 15 players in the league right now. So I think more importantly, it's the Houston Rockets who are going to need an X factor. And are we also going to see a record-breaking number of three-pointers attempted and scored in this series, especially if it goes more than 5-6 games?
Oh, yeah. I think that'll happen without a doubt. And as far as the X factors, I mean, you mentioned it, and I agree with you. I think Clint Capella is going to be huge in this series. If he dominates on the defensive end as a rim protector and also and isn't forced too often to go out and guard at the perimeter, which he did do a better job of in these past couple of playoff series than, say, as the regular season went on, Capella definitely made improvements guarding around the perimeter. So it'll be interesting to see how the Warriors try to attack him defensively. And then, like, as far as like individual matchups, curious to see how frequently and how often Steve Kerr goes to the death lineup. I guess people are calling it the Hamptons five lineup now, where you're starting Draymond at center. And does Draymond guard Clint Capella? And if Draymond is exhausting himself trying to guard Capella, because as well as Draymond plays defensively undersized when he's guarding bigger guys at the four and the five, if Capella plays well, his length and athleticism is still probably going to be a little bit too much for Dre to handle. And then at times, if Harden's going off, do you say, if you're Steve Kerr, all right, we're going to take our best defender in Draymond and switch him on to Harden? And then at that point, you know, who do you throw on Capella? Is JaVale McGee going to see minutes in this series? Like, who? It's going to be a really fascinating X's and O's chess match between Steve Kerr and Mike D'Antoni to figure out how exactly they get the best out of the guys that they have. And I think Capella for the Rockets and Draymond for the Warriors are going to be key. And I think eventually what's going to tip the scales is that the Warriors have so many, as you said, like all-star, superstar players that if KD has an off night, Steph and Klay and Draymond can carry that team. And if Steph has an off night, then KD and et cetera, et cetera. Whereas the Rockets, if they want to win 4 games out of this best of 7 series, they need Harden to be spectacular, they need Paul to be spectacular, and they need Capella to be spectacular.
I'm without a doubt with you on all of those things, and I think this is going to be a very interesting series. So I hope it doesn't disappoint. The NBA playoffs have not disappointed one bit so far. So I would imagine that this Western Conference will not disappoint either. We got to take a short break, but when we come back, we're diving into more Bulls evaluations here as we're going to get to Denzel Valentine and Justin Holiday as well before we wrap it up. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. All right, we're back for our final segment doing Bulls evaluations. If you maybe missed an episode one here or there over the last week or so, we've been trying to spend every episode, at least one segment, kind of breaking down each player on this roster, taking 2 players at a time, talking about their season in 2017-2018, and then evaluating what their future is, not only with the Bulls if they decide to go somewhere else, and maybe what they need to improve on in 2018 and 2019, and if they're actually a part of the future of this team right now. So I think we're getting into more of players now that are of more importance to the Chicago Bulls than maybe a few others that we've talked about early on in this week. So we've got Denzel Valentine and Justin Holiday today. See Red Fred's boy in Denzel Valentine. Let's start with him first. For me, Matt, I have to say Denzel Valentine, I think, surprised a lot of people this year. The way he was able to develop his shot, to come off the bench and be a scorer, pretty much do whatever Fred Hoiberg had asked of him this year. And, you know, people laughed at him when he said, you know, this Bulls team should be a playoff team. You know, they're not going to be as bad as they think they are. People kind of used Denzel, I think, at least in the early part of the season, as the butt of some jokes because they didn't think he could really play in this league. And I think he's proved people wrong. So what was your overall evaluation of Denzel Valentine in 2017-2018? Do you feel like he's going to be a part of what the Bulls want to do in the future? And sort of what is his ceiling in terms of maybe 2-3 years down the road? And what's something that ultimately he needs to develop and continue to stay a part of this Bulls future?
Yeah, well, unless you think that John Paxson is a liar, and, you know, we don't have the time to get into that long conversation. I mean, John Paxson said at any time this season, during the season, at the end of season press conference, when he was talking about the core, the young core of this team, since the Butler trade, obviously it's Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen, and the two names that he usually mentions after those three are Bobby Portis and Denzel Valentine. So, yes, you know, by the accounts of the president of this organization, Denzel Valentine is a part of the plan. He's a part of the plan moving forward. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I like what I saw from Denzel after a very frustrating rookie year that got started off on the wrong foot. You know, he had that really bad, wasn't it an ankle sprain like in preseason that kept him out really early in his rookie year?
Right.
And he never really found a spot in the rotation after that. And, you know, was a rookie and the Bulls were trying to make the playoffs and wasn't really finding a spot. And he bounced back well from that. And he, to his credit, he doubled all of his stats and, you know, upped his scoring to 10 points a game, 5 rebounds a game, 3.2 assists per game, was the second best 3-point shooter on the roster behind Nico Mirotic. Had that really weird Denzel floater that he loved to use. And yeah, it's weird and it makes a lot of Bulls fans uneasy. But I mean, Zach Lowe even talked about it in one of his 10 things he likes columns, that Denzel shot it very, very efficiently in the 93rd percentile among all NBA wings in short mid-range shots, basically that meaning his floater. Because he's not a guy that can attack the rim. He doesn't have the length or athleticism or the ball handling to do that. But he found another way to add to his offensive game and be not just a three-point shooter, a spot-up shooter, which he said during his rookie season he didn't want to just be that. So he did creatively find a new way to add to his offensive game. His defense got better. It's still not great. I'd still not even necessarily call it good, but it got better. So there's hope that it can still get better. And, I mean, as far as the ceiling, you know, and I think we talked about this, you know, at some point when his first comments first came out, Denzel said towards the end of the season, I believe I'm a starter in this league. I think I should be a starter next season. And he said he's planning to double his stats again. Really? He's going to average 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists next year? To me, when you look at the Bulls offense and the fact that they're still going to try to build that offense around Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen, unless Valentine is like a 60% three-point shooter, he's not scoring 20 points a game next season. He's just not. And a starter, it'll be, you know, it depends on if the Bulls add a wing in free agency, if they keep Justin Holiday around, if they draft a wing. I mean, maybe right now Denzel has the upper hand to be starting at the three because, like, Paul Zipser disappointed everybody and the Bulls' wing depth is just not there right now. But I see his ceiling as a strong bench player, and I hope for the sake of the overall talent of this Bulls core as they move through this rebuild that he's not the guy starting at the wing.
I think it's Denzel Valentine's job to lose, right? Like, even if the Bulls draft a wing at number 6 or at number 22 with their pick, I still think going into camp it's Denzel Valentine's job to lose. I mean, you had just brought it up. He increased his stats in almost virtually every category you can think of offensively this year. His uptick in minutes, he was averaging 10 more minutes this year per game than last year. Last year in his rookie season, he only played 57 games, didn't start in a single game. This year, he started in 37 games. You had touched on his points per game, rebounds, and assists. He went from 5.1 points per game to 10.2 points per game. He went from 2.6 rebounds to 5.1. Assists went 1.1 to 3.2. His field goal percentage went up nearly 8% from 35.4 to 42%. You look at his three-point percentage, which went up nearly 4%. He's borderline a 40% three-point shooter this season. The uptick in shots from 3-2 are up about a shot and a half. So honestly, like, everything that you could have asked for a player in year two to come in, Denzel Valentine has done that. You look at his stats across the board, and like we had talked about sort of during the season, I felt like Denzel Valentine's best fit and the best option for him to succeed would be coming off the bench with that second unit and being that reliable scorer off the bench. We saw that for a long time with Denzel Valentine, and I know he started in 37 games this year, and maybe he feels like he should be a starter, and maybe he has proved that. Maybe he has earned at least the shot to lose the job to maybe a rookie or somebody from the outside coming in this season. I've been impressed. I'll be honest with you. I didn't think Denzel Valentine was going to come in this second year and do some of the things that he was able to do, and one being a reliable scorer. And his three-point shot, which I was questionable when he came out of Michigan State, whether he could be a guy that could knock down the three consistently at the NBA level. And he's worked on that, and he's decided to take more threes last year than he did in his rookie year. I think some credit is definitely deserved to Fred Hoiberg, too. Let's be honest here. In Denzel Valentine's rookie year, Denzel Valentine had said, I didn't really know what my role was on this team after his rookie season. He said, I didn't want to be a spot-up shooter like you had said, sitting in the corner waiting for corner threes and not really being facilitated or being able to facilitate the ball to other players. And he got that opportunity this year. So I think credit does go to Fred Hoiberg, too, to put Denzel Valentine in spots where he can succeed, and he did that. Now, whether or not he doubles his stats next year, I think is a little bit of an overstatement from Denzel Valentine, but man, the sky's the limit for this guy, and he's proving people wrong after this season. He's 24 years old. I think the only thing that worries me and should worry a lot of other people, and we'll keep a monitor on it closely over the next couple seasons, is his knees. I think the knee problem is something that I hope holds up, but we already saw it this season. He had to get his knee scoped for, what, the fourth time? He had it done twice in high school, I think maybe it was even the fifth time, twice at Michigan State, and then he had it done once again this year. And while the scoping wasn't a crazy thing, and I think he only ended up missing one or two games, it's definitely something to monitor. And even in the drafts, talking to scouts, they said, you know, Denzel Valentine can be a very productive player in this league, but I would be very surprised if his career went beyond 30 years old just because of his knees. So that's just going to be something to monitor as well. But yeah, I think it's Denzel Valentine's job to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily insinuating that there's anybody right now who on this current Bulls roster makes more sense than Denzel starting
absolutely
at the three, assuming that the Bulls still want to keep LaVine at the two and play him in the backcourt with Dunn, because I think playing LaVine at the three just creates all sorts of defensive nightmares. I think you're right. I mean, like, say the Bulls do take Mikal Bridges, if none of the bigs on the board they're really in love with at six, Bridges might be a reach at six. That's a different conversation. But maybe he doesn't impress enough as a rookie in training camp to beat out the third-year veteran, Denzel, and they feel good about Denzel starting. And something else, I mean, you were rattling off some of his stats and the ways he's improved this year. Just looking at his splits, 37 starts and 40 appearances off the bench this season. So really almost an equal 50-50 split as far as how many games he started, how many games off the bench. In starts, he shot 43.8% from the field and 41.3% from downtown. When he came off the bench, those numbers dipped to 39.8 overall from the field and just 36% from downtown. So, I mean, it's only one season's worth of stats when you're looking at those splits, but for nearly a half starts, half bench appearances in collectively nearly 80 games, those are pretty different numbers. And it suggests that Denzel felt a lot more comfortable and a lot more confident shooting the ball when he was in that starting five as opposed to coming off the bench. So maybe that's something that the Bulls are looking at when they're trying to figure out if he is that starter that he thinks he is.
Just one last thing I just kind of want to touch on. In terms of Denzel Valentine's passing game, I thought a quick note about it that was kind of cool. So points generated by assists for Denzel Valentine in his rookie year was only about 150 points. This season, he went to 581 points generated by assists. So that's another strength of Denzel Valentine's game, too. I think at Michigan State, he was sort of, you know, he was the guy to bring the ball up to run the offense. And I think that's kind of an underrated skill of Denzel Valentine's, too. We talk about his shooting and maybe some of his defensive improvements, too. But I think he's a sneaky good passer, too. So keep an eye on that as well. And like you said, I think it's clear if the Bulls don't have any wing options coming in, and even if they do draft or sign somebody, I think it would be a disservice to what Denzel Valentine put together in 2017-2018 to at least give him a shot in camp to say, all right, it's your job to lose. If somebody beats you out, then that's the way it goes. But I think we're both in kind of the same camp that we were pleasantly surprised by Denzel Valentine's game. So let's get to Justin Holiday now, because Justin Holiday has been an important veteran for the Bulls. He played better than I actually thought he was going to coming in. Came in on a pretty good deal this season coming up. He's in a contract year. He's getting paid about $4.5 million from the Bulls. I think my biggest thing with Justin Holiday is he's going to be some sort of bait for a lot of other teams going into next season. Maybe even you look at the trade deadline, if he's going to be a part of a package for maybe a team that needs a boost off the bench, needs some type of reliable veteran scoring. I still think he is one of the pieces that the Bulls have in terms of trade value. That's super valuable. $4.5 million for a guy like Justin Holiday is kind of unheard of in the league right now. So I think the Bulls have really good value in Justin Holiday's game. And like, I mean, he's a guy that can come out there and shoot the lights out, but I mean, there's also times where Justin Holiday will go out there and go 2-for-15, 2-for-13. It happens, but I think he is the most valuable, outside of maybe Robin Lopez, the most valuable trade asset that the Bulls have right now on this roster. Do you foresee him sticking around in 2018-2019 the entire season, or would you place your bets right now more so than not that he will be traded by maybe the trade deadline next season?
If I had to put money on it, I would guess that he's gone by the trade deadline next season, if not sooner. And look, all the credit in the world to Justin Holiday, who was absolutely the veteran leader in that young locker room that Paxson thought he was getting. Remember, he had that short stint when the Bulls dumped Heinrich to Atlanta at the end of that 2015-16 season, and then the Bulls sent him to New York in that Rose trade. So clearly the Bulls liked Holiday in that short, like I think it was like a 27-game stint he had a couple of seasons ago, and brought him back. And you're right. Now, looking at that two-year $9 million, the $4.38 he's due next season is a bargain for not only a guy who can, you know, contribute offensively and is a pretty solid defender who comes up with some steals and gets his hand in passing lanes and has good length at his position. He's also the great veteran presence in the locker room, a very likable guy. Everybody in Chicago loves him. That all being said, I hope the Bulls trade him this offseason, especially if they plan on keeping Robin Lopez around for another, at least the start of next season, to still have that veteran presence in the locker room and being the team's starting center. I mean, the reason that Holiday played so much this season before that All-Star break thing where he and Lopez both sat before the Bulls got in trouble with the front, with the NBA, is that LaVine was out. Now that, you know, knock on wood, the Bulls get LaVine re-signed and Chris Dunn is healthy and that is your starting backcourt, where's Justin Holiday playing? You're going to bring him off the bench? Justin Holiday is a nearly 30-year-old veteran who started all 72 games that he played for the Bulls last season. Started all 72. Now, I don't know if he's good enough to be a starter on every team in this league, but he's certainly good enough to be a starter on a handful of teams in this league. And what are you doing if you're giving Justin Holiday minutes that should be going to Zach LaVine and trying to build him into the star player that you think he can be in this Bulls rebuild? He's the core piece. He's the guy who should be getting all of those minutes, most of those minutes. And I just don't see the Bulls having – I don't see the Bulls or Justin Holiday benefiting from bringing him off the bench, especially when you have plenty of other young guys that want to play minutes at that position on the roster already and might be added to this roster coming in the draft. Because he does have value on the trade market and because I don't see him starting in this Bulls lineup next season making sense, to me, he's got to be moved.
I don't think I disagree with you. The only thing that I would say, too, and maybe this goes back to our Denzel Valentine conversation, is if he started every game last season, and obviously there's going to be some clogging with Zach LaVine being fully healthy, knock on wood, this season coming up, maybe this pushes the Bulls at the start of the season to go with Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Justin Holiday. Now, that might be hot garbage on defense to start the season, but that might be Denzel Valentine's only real barrier right there. And especially if the Bulls are trying to boost Holiday's value, especially over the course of the first 2 months of the season, you might see lineups where Chris Dunn, Justin Holiday, and Zach LaVine are all starting in that lineup. At the very least, if Holiday does come off the bench next season, I would imagine he's going to play somewhere between 26 and 30 minutes a night, especially if the Bulls are trying to move him. So I agree with you. This is the first time really Justin Holiday's gotten an opportunity in the NBA to start and to be a consistent starter. This year, obviously, some of his numbers dipped down, but he had a career year in points per game, assists, rebounds, turnovers. Obviously, all of these stats being kind of increased because of the minutes that he played and obviously being able to start in 72 games. His career high goes all the way back to 2015-2016 season with a couple different teams in which he only started in 5 games. So we went from 5 games career-wise, career high, to 72 games. I think you're right, though. Ultimately, this season, I think, is going to be about boosting Justin Holiday's value as much as possible through the early part of the season next year, and then see what happens, see what the trade value is. And hey, I'm not even putting out the possibility that this summer, maybe if the Bulls find a deal that they like, Justin Holiday becomes a part of that package, because I think that $4.5 million deal that he's on right now, the value there is pretty high, even though if you don't think Justin Holiday is like this end-all, be-all player that maybe some playoff teams can add, I still think he has a ton of value for the money that he's making next season.
Yeah, it might not yield like a first-round draft pick without any protections on it, but it could certainly yield. Holiday could certainly yield a second-round draft pick, which, let's remember, the Bulls don't have any of those in 2018 or 2019 because they trade them away like, you know, people handing out flyers on the street. And then another name that we haven't mentioned in this conversation, which is worth mentioning, is David Nwaba, who we are hearing the Bulls want to bring back, a restricted free agent the Bulls will try to bring back. And he and Valentine are both guys who are sort of like combo shooting guards slash small forwards. So when it comes to Justin Holiday and where he fits in, and if it's done in Levine as your starting backcourt, would you rather see Valentine and Nwaba sharing real minutes, one as the starter and one as the backup at that spot, and developing their games, or giving minutes to a veteran Justin Holiday, who I don't think the Bulls see as being a long-term piece of this puzzle? To me, I was so encouraged by what I saw from David Nwaba this year. I want to see him re-signed, and I want to see him get a bunch of minutes next season. And between that and Denzel Valentine trying to take another step next season, and Zach LaVine needing to, hopefully, with a healthy season, play and start in, you know, somewhere close to 80 games, to me, Holiday doesn't fit in anywhere there.
Real quick before we get out of here, Matt, I noticed our friends over at Locked On Wizards low-key liked and retweeted your column on Denzel Valentine. Any chance they're kind of interested in maybe what he... I know there had been rumblings about if the Bulls were going to take on bad contracts from other teams and maybe get some value, whether it's a first-round pick or whatever it is. We were talking about possible trade scenarios. Seems like and they're not the first people to tell me that maybe the Wizards would be interested in somebody like Denzel Valentine. So I just thought that was kind of funny, and that'd be an interesting spot, especially where the Wizards sit right now, where they got a decision to make whether it's to blow it up or to try and dump some of these large contracts to be able to sign somebody. Denzel Valentine might be a piece in a trade as well if the Bulls are really trying to add young assets, or maybe they feel like there's a player out there or a future pick that they like. He could. It's not out of the possibility that Denzel Valentine could be part of a deal. I just thought it was funny that our friends over at Locked On Wizards low-key kind of liked that and were interested in at least what his evaluation was in 2017-2018.
Yeah, and you know, that it's totally feasible and understandable that they would be interested in Valentine after he had a much improved sophomore campaign in the NBA. Do I think Denzel Valentine is the difference maker that a Wizards team with John Wall, Bradley Beal, and Otto Porter needs to go from being a first-round exit playoff team to something more than that? No offense to Denzel, but no, I don't think he's that missing piece.
And just quick note, every time you say campaign, I'm, you know, like campaign, like a campaign, oh, I'm just automatically going to think of campaign.
You automatically start picturing somebody dancing next to Russell Westbrook, right?
Or just scooting in on his little... scooting in on his little rider. Oh, man.
Bulls back at point guard of the future, baby.
Oh, this is going to be fun this summer, just to kind of figure out where everything's going, and hopefully these guys develop into what we hope that they are going to. Justin Holiday, Denzel Valentine, very interested to see what kind of happens with these guys. You brought David Nwaba up real quick, too, and I think that's somebody I didn't even think about, too, is like, now you've got a clog in these guys of, all right, you've got Justin Holiday for one more year. I get right now maybe he is the better player over those two guys, but he's not going to be here long term. So I think maybe the most accurate thing here for me to see coming into the season would be Justin Holiday getting as many minutes as possible if they don't move him this summer to try to boost up his value there. And maybe Denzel Valentine will have to wait a little bit until somebody gets moved off the roster to obtain that starting position. But we'll see. I'll see. I'm interested to see what the battle's like coming to training camp next year, because there's going to be a lot of movement, a lot of interesting pieces that might step up, and this starting role might look a little bit different than maybe we think right now, a few months away from at least training camp, and especially without knowing what the draft is going to look like, at least for right now, definitely things can move, but definitely two interesting pieces from the Chicago Bulls roster.
Absolutely. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if Valentine's still here when the Bulls get into training camp in the fall, and the whole conundrum of if Valentine's still here, and as you said, do the Bulls try to play him a lot to boost his trade value to deal him at the deadline next season?
Holiday, right?
Yeah, Holiday. I'm sorry, I didn't know what I said. Holiday. To me, that's that big conundrum of, okay, does that mean you're starting Dunn, LaVine, Holiday, and is LaVine at the three? Or is Holiday at the three? I mean, because it's obviously Markkanen and Rolo, right? And Dunn at the one. So that big question mark area is who's starting at the two and who's starting at the three, and how does Fred Hoiberg figure that out? Because some of the minutes that we saw Levine trying to play at the three and trying to guard at the three last season is...
Just watching Levine try to guard at all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, we had our fun about that in an episode last week about how different ways that we could, quote unquote, improve Zach Levine defensively. Most of the answers were complete fabrications and jokes. So that concern is a real concern. And I know Fred Hoiberg is more an offensive minded coach than a defensive coach. But if that's really what you want to do with the 1, 2, and 3 is Dunn, Levine, and Mark, or Dunn, Levine and Holiday, I don't know. I don't know about that. That's going to be scary on the defensive end.
I'm still 100% in on trying to brand Zach Levine's own hot jardinier and trying to sell it to other teams and also serving it up before games. So that is still a very real possibility. I am totally down for that. And obviously, if Zach Levine does get a deal with a jardinier company, which
hey,
if you know anybody at a jardinier company around in Chicago and is looking to try and get a campaign going, we will be down to be the front runners of that.
Hey,
so
you know, start a GoFundMe page for talking about a Levine.
Don't even
and
bring up the bill. Don't even bring up the billboard.
A little tiny print at the bottom, brought to you by the same folks at the FireGuard PAX billboard.
Oh, get the fuck out of here! All right, I think that's gonna about do it here on Locked On Bulls.
Waste of money, people. Waste of money.
You can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us, Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We are live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Interact with us whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, have a wonderful weekend, Bulls Nation. Go White Sox. More importantly, Crosstown Classic going on this weekend. So if you're going out to the games, that's awesome. I'm very jealous. And also, Cubs fans, be very scared because one Michael Kopech might be coming up to face the Cubs on Saturday. So we'll see how that plays out. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great weekend, Bulls Nation. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.